famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. And this is day two of the panel having the day off. Yeah. Because they insisted, and what am I going to do? You know, when you've got to listen to the voices in your head. So I gave them the time off, and we're going to spend some time together here. Now, I want to mention, as I did yesterday, that the effort at getting the website ready for you, it continues. We're doing data transferring. That's why it's taking as long as it is, because, as I mentioned, with all of that information, with all of that, with all of those files, with all of that data, with all of that media, it takes time. And that, my man, is what's going on there. So, as I have said to you, we've got a very, very cool-looking website that is on its way. We have a much, much more vibrant-looking website. It's going to be a lot easier to use. Our BSP members, we will completely revamp the way the archive works to make it so much easier for you to access the hours and the hours of content. So keep an eye out on social media as well, because we'll be posting little sneak peeks. That's something else to keep in mind. We'll be showing you peeks and looks at the website, and also at some point do a kind of a how-to video, you know, of how to navigate it, how to look at it, and how to use it. All right, hi, I'm Phil Hendry. I have never used drugs the wrong way. Oh, look what I found. A bottle of tequila that I'll never buy again. Because, as I was so wisely informed, this is not 100% agave. No wonder this just didn't sit well. I never liked this, and I couldn't tell what it was. I didn't even think it was the tequila. I thought it might have been drinking ginger beer. I thought maybe that was it, you know. But I didn't want to spend a whole lot of money on tequila. This is dog. Three generations of the Sousa family. That's all well and good, man. Why don't you mother... It's crap. What is it doing in here? Anyway, I don't drink on the job. So I was on my way today to do looping for F is for Family. And what looping is, oh, we need to redo this line, or we've changed a line here. And you do it to the animated track. Or if they don't have the fully animated track, you do it to a sort of a sketch track. I think they call it an animatronic, that's the word's wrong, but nothing really all that big to report, except... We were doing it at a Margarita Mix in Santa Monica, which is a great... The Margarita Mix studios, there's two of them that I've been to, Santa Monica and Hollywood. They're great. I mean, really, my hat's off to the people, the owners, everybody that manages Margarita Mix. It's just a great series of voiceover studios, of voiceover rooms. They have... The one in Santa Monica is awesome because they've got a full-time chef there. You sit at a breakfast bar... And I'd never been to it. You know, I've been doing voiceover in Los Angeles since 1980. And for the first time in my life, and I'm not as active in the business as a lot of guys are, because I've done other things like radio, because there's some cats that are like full-time voiceover. So I don't know. I probably don't get around to as many places as they do. But I hadn't seen this ever until about 2-3 years ago, where you walk in. And I guess it's like the voiceover version of craft services at a camera shoot, you know, at a sitcom or a movie or something that you do. And they always have craft services. There's a guy there with food. Sometimes they'll make omelets in the morning all day long. They have food for you to go and grab if you're hungry. But voiceover, I guess we had coffee and we had drinks and stuff, but I never saw a place where you could sit down and get a goddamn a plate of scrambled eggs or, you know, and this place is just great. And not only that, they have coffee machines that are like really good ones, you know, that make actual cool lattes or whatever you want, espressos. And the guy they have there is this young guy from Omaha, cats from Omaha, Nebraska. I don't know how he found his way out here, but he is interested in the culinary arts and cooking. This gig came up. So when I go in there, I've only been there a couple times, but every time I'm there, he's making those Rice Krispie squares with chocolate on top. I'm always watching this guy do this. I don't eat them because it's like way out of my, that's out of my pay grade when it comes to calories, man. Don't eat those, but I can, at least I can watch. And he's always making something like that. Or you walk in and he's made a little plate of miniature cupcakes, you know. Or you walk in and he's made, what the hell else? All kinds of stuff, man. And the studios are great. And it's a great place to work. So I'm coming down PCH. And I use, you know, the Google Map GPS. You know, where are you going? Bing, in the, you know, starting route. That, you know, and it's going, take this to, you know, go left. Do you want, oh, there's a faster route available. I use all that stuff. But I've never approached Margarita Mix from Pacific Coast Highway before. I was always coming over on the 10. I was always coming from downtown as opposed to coming from the coast. But that was where I had to go. So from my house there, the straightest shot is to go down Pacific Coast Highway to the 10. And then, how did I do that? Then you get a left on Lincoln. But anyway, that I found that out later because I didn't know where the fuck I was going. I knew it was like over there somewhere. But that's cool because I have my GPS. And suddenly the phone is crashes. Battery. I'm late. And I don't know where I'm going. And now I have no phone. I can't even call anybody to tell them I'm late. And thus began a frantic effort at figuring out, why did my phone crash? I thought it was charging all this time. I had it plugged in to the cigarette lighter thing, which was, uh-oh, it's like halfway out. Accident. So I'm going to push that mother in. And just, I'm at the mercy now of how long it's going to take to boot this phone up, you know, to the point where I can at least get the GPS back. I was almost on time with this. I'm going to be late because I'm going to have to find my way. And I don't know. I figure I'll hang a left up onto Ocean. And I know where it is, but I don't know the fastest way to get to it from where I am. I know where it is. I know it's over on Lincoln. I know it's off the 10. I can go over there from where I am, but it's going to be a lot of winding and left turns and right turns and not sure. Oh, I haven't hit there yet. Keep going. That kind of feeling your way, you know, as opposed to, boom, direct shot. I go down. I was almost on time, and now this is going to me up for at least 10 minutes. So I'm approaching the point where I have to hang that left onto California and then just drive into the miasma and the maze of that I know I'll have to deal with to get over to Lincoln where the studio is. And it's coming up on me, and so all of a sudden, boom, the phone's on. Just like 50 feet away from the intersection that I would have turned onto. And believe me, if I turned up there, it was worse hell than I thought because they were doing construction right there on Ocean, right in the middle of the day. And, oh, no, there's not much traffic, not much. Just like every fucking car in the world. And, oh, are there people up there? Sure, it's pedestrian traffic. It's like goddamn California. I don't care. It's cloudy and it's foggy and it's fucked up as hell. But that doesn't mean there ain't 8 million people up there eating lunch at the thing, walking up and down. Cops everywhere. Don't give a. And I would have had to have gone up there, and I'm 50 feet. You know, I'm like, I'm getting closer. I'm getting, bing, the phone's on. Yeah, baby. And I was just about ready to kind of swing it into the turn lane, you know, and just resign myself to the living hell that was ahead of me. And I hear that, boing, yes. And as it turned out, thank God, because it was just merely PCH onto 10, Lincoln, left-hand turn. Oh, yeah. And I felt particularly accomplished and proud and powerful and empowered, because if you go past the studio entrance, you're for another 5 minutes because you are in four lanes of boulevard traffic. There is no turning left or turning right and backing up and going back because there's a whole big median there. There's a freeway that is pouring off onto the street there. You're in the middle of an unrelenting river of traffic that you cannot swim against. So if you know, I missed the entrance, I gotta go all the way down here, I can't do a U-turn, I'm gonna have to do, and there's a fucking Metrorail train there too, so I gotta navigate that thing. Can I turn left into this gas station? No, there's too much traffic, and there's a lot of cars in that gas station, I'm gonna try to back out into this, forget it. I'm not one of those people, I don't know about you, I'm just not one of those guys that doesn't give a about the traffic. You know, I've seen people like that. You have too. They don't care. They're going to stop. They're going to make their left turn over two sets of double yellow lines illegally. But they don't care because there's their turn, and that's what we're going to do. Even if it means there's traffic backed up for 6 miles behind them, which is generally the case. That happened to me once. I was behind an asshole like that. But the story had a happy ending. A cop saw this and was like, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And he just, like, tucked right in behind this dumb hit the fucking rack of lights. This guy's like, all of a sudden, dead to rights. So I was feeling very empowered as I turned left off of the Santa Monica Freeway onto Lincoln because I knew right down there is the studio, and I know it's a right-hand turn, and ain't nobody going to get in front of me in that right-hand lane. I'm going to be the guy. I'm the one. I happen to be the first guy at the light, and I will lead the way, and I will control everything behind me. And I'll get to that turn, and I'll go in, and yes, there won't be any waiting around for some asshole in front of me. There won't be any kind of, uh-oh, you know, I'm a lane over, I can't get over. None of that. And sure enough, that's exactly how it went as I got across the light there at the Interstate 10, and I came up to the right-hand turn, and in I go to Margarita Mix, and yeah, and not only that, but you know how so those days it's just everything goes your way? Not only that, as soon as I turn, there's a parking space right there. And because the door's here, I get out of my truck, and I'm in. And it was one of those great days. And then I got, see, that's to me, that's what I call a great day when that happens to me. Then when I got in there, they said, am I late? No, not only are you not late, Phil, but there's somebody in the booth already and they're going to, it's going long. So you're totally good. Have yourself some coffee, sit down and stare at the guy making the Rice Krispies, whatever the fuck you want to do. So the morning just was like, yeah, you know, and then I sat down and some cat came, I don't know who he was, an engineer, a talent, might have been the guy, a manager, I don't know what he was. He says, so what's going on with the Obamacare thing? So he parked his ass there and we're watching the news. And that began a whole series of conversations. But anyway, got to remember to check that your plug in the car is plugged in all the way. Because if it isn't, your phone's not charging. You know, Sirius comes with your car. You guys know, I just leased a car, new car, and Sirius is all over me like white on rice to subscribe. And I just, I'm not into it, man. I don't give that much of a. Not because they suck, but because I've got it now where I listen to music in my car, which is my music that I like. And somebody asked me, what radio do you listen to? Sport, I do. This is what I just was listening to. I listened to KPFK, which is a far left-wing station here in L.A. Not necessarily because I want to hear nothing but lefty, but I do like to hear lefty when it comes to certain things. But it just so happens the show that was on was not really a lefty show. It was a gay show called, what the hell is that show called? The one I wound up listening to was IMRU. And they interviewed a guy who was transsexual or transgender. I'm not quite sure. And I actually had this discussion. LGBTQT. There's a whole bunch of other letters. Did you know that? There's a bunch of other ones. And I learned this from Maria because she is doing her marriage, family, child counseling degree. And these are all things that are part of the process, the education. And she said, it's LGBTQTRFG, a bunch of them. But this guy was raised in an Amish village, if I'm not mistaken, or around Amish people. Gay, and not only gay, but transgender. Transgender and transsexual are two different things. In a very religious family. So I didn't hear him get too much, because it was at the tail end of the show, but he said, I don't see a lot of, he said, I talk to my family, but I keep them at arm's length. I talk to them on the phone. He said, and I've spent most of my time in big cities. He even used the word sanctuary. He said, I got sanctuary in big cities, meaning he was at risk, he was in danger in small towns. In small cities, small towns, small municipalities, it was a dangerous place for him to be. He said, I got sanctuary when I moved to the big cities. I thought it was a very interesting word. I think it was a slightly, tragic word. But what was the latest? Where's the, there is no evidence of the wiretap? Oh, I'm sorry, I should have asked. What did Spicer say? Well, he didn't really say that. Well, he said, I just want him to know that he ain't fooling me. I don't know about anybody else. I mean, everybody in the world, everybody in this country can be brain dead as for all I care. I don't give it, but ain't fooling me. I mean, it's Act of Violence. Oh, Christ, is that a great movie. Yes, I've told you about it. Act of Violence, you got to see. Great movie. They just showed a clip from it. It is definitely, it's not a, you know, public domain. I wish I could show it on Saturday Cinema. God, I'd love to show that movie. Act of Violence is a badass movie. And as I've said, it's a reverse. It's the opposite of Cape Fear. The guy that does the stalking in Act of Violence is the good guy. And the guy being stalked is the bad guy. Now, dig that. You know, in Cape Fear, the stalker is an evil played by, depending upon your favorite one, Robert De Niro or Robert Mitchum. And the good guy's either Nick Nolte or Gregory Peck. In the movie Act of Violence, the good guy is Robert Ryan and the bad guy is Van Heflin. And the bad guy is a homeowner and I believe an insurance salesman or some or a real estate developer, that's it, with a wife and a baby on the way living in the subdivision. And the good guy is a limping, harried, angry veteran just returned from the war, played by Robert Ryan. I don't want to tell you anymore. People are always getting on me about the spoiler thing, and I'm always torn between, God, I want to tell you about this movie, then yeah, you're right. If you get a chance to see it, it's called Act of Violence. Robert Ryan, Van Heflin, Janet Leigh in I think her first role. She's pretty goddamn good. And a fantastic look at the L.A. night, you know, the underworld of the night, the real back alley of Los Angeles in the 40s. And it's great because it's got that one character. I think I've made fun of him from time to time. Come on, sucker. Don't be a sucker. And it's got the great line. Give him a drink. He's out on his feet. That kind of. And there's a hooker in it played by. I don't know who. I don't want to say who the actress is, but look it up. You'll see it on IMDb. But there, it's great. It's just L.A. by night, just this scummy underworld. And I think it was all shot down there near Angel's Flight, you know, downtown, all that where all the is and was. And you see all these, you can't miss them, L.A. shots where the overpass and the darkened underpasses and the traffic and really cool, really cool. Well, you're not supposed to know it's L.A. It's supposed to be just any town, USA. But in trying to extricate himself from this problem, the guy finds his way into, why don't you meet my friend? Sure, he can help you. He solves problems. That's right, that's what I do, friend. I solve problems. See, you have a problem, I can solve it. And then later on, maybe you do something for me. It's just these guys that are, you know, you're, don't go there, man. But that was then, and this is now, and, this is the worst media that we've ever... This is the worst press corps I think I've ever seen. Just stupid doesn't even begin to cover this media, this press, this generation of press. And guys that I used to think were great, like Chris Wallace, I used to think Chris Wallace was really smart. You know? Didn't you? I just, wow, this cat's sharp. He's better than his old man. He is the worst, most chicken I think I've ever seen in my... He is the most ineffective, feckless... You know, lightweight I've ever seen. It was just astounding to watch that before my very eyes. I thought this guy had some balls. Nothing going on there with Chris Wallace. Just a chicken. Just a completely. He's completely thrown. But I will give Trump this. He has taken today's press for whatever it's worth. And just wrung them out and thrown them away. I mean, he's handled them with one hand tied behind his back. Not a problem. I didn't think anybody was that good. Did you? Take the American press. This is the free press. This is the United States. This is the democracy. The free press of America. Oh, yeah. Boy, yeah. And, man, that cat has taken these guys and just... Not a problem at all, man. One hand tied behind his thing. I mean, I thought that the American press corps was the state-of-the-art press corps. Who's better? Who represents the free press more, I don't know, more eloquently than the American press? Not that they're the greatest reporters. God knows there are other reporters who've risked their lives, risked far greater to get a story out. But the real, as far as we're concerned, as Americans, you know, for better or for worse, we think the world begins and ends at our own borders. And when it comes to the free press, by God, we invented it's in our Bill of Rights. I got a pain in my neck that I'm not sure whether the pain in my neck right now is Chris Wallace or it's a real pain in my neck. No, it's a real pain in my neck. And then along comes Donald Trump, and this guy doesn't even break a sweat, and he busts them right over his knee without even breaking a sweat. That's probably the easiest thing that Trump's ever done in his life, is handle the American press, snap them right across his knees, made them look like clowns. I'm telling you, man, like clowns. Like ineffective, just fumbling, stumbling, muttering, you know, Joe Pesci and Goodfellas.
Spider, you know, you're stumbling, mumbling. You know what's wrong with you, Spider? Your whole family of rats. Comes from a family of rats. You're stumbling, mumbling, prick you.
Well, that's the that's the American press. Good God, I never thought it was possible. I'm call me naive, say what you will. I don't think there's anybody in this country that wouldn't say the following thing. Boy, they've really made me angry at times. Yes, of course, everybody. If you're far right, you think they're a bunch of libs. If you're a lib, you think they're all right wingers. Well, you have your favorites and you don't have your favorites. And they've made you angry, and they've got you to sign petitions, this and that. But did you ever think in your wildest hallucinations that they were chump change? That they were like no big deal, man. I bet you Trump gets out of bed in the morning and laughs when he thinks about having to deal with the American press. Now, you're going to say to me, oh, yeah, that's right, Phil, sure. That's why he tweets all of that angry stuff. He says they're the enemy. Well, no doubt they piss him off. There's no question he pisses them off, but he knows exactly what to do. He knows exactly how to handle them. I'm not saying that the guy is moral. I'm not saying that the guy is ethical. I'm just saying he knows how to handle the American press. He knows how to, at least to his base, neutralize the hell out of them, and to the opposition, frustrate the hell out of them. Because it's frustrating to say, here's what we got on you, man. And that cat takes that and just wipes his ass with it and gets on with his day. That's exactly what that dude's doing. I got to admire that, man. I'm sorry. I don't like it, maybe. Just as a free and, 21-year-old American, plus a few years, I may not dig it. I may not, you know, like some of the stuff, as the man would say, I don't like a lot of stuff that's going on around here, you know? But I got to admire that. Come on. You know, here we are in America, post-World War II. Edward R. Murrow, Walter Cronkite, Woodward and Bernstein. I mean, you know, we have what we think is a murderer's row, a hall of fame of some great reporters. And of course, there was a thing happened a couple of weeks ago. I think the statement was made that, you know, reporters, they're nothing, the press is nothing. And somebody released a picture of journalists that have died in on the job, who were killed, you know, who literally their lives were put in grave danger and they lost their lives doing their job. It's a very moving thing. And I don't know what it is about me. Maybe it's the way I was raised or the industry. I've been around journalists my whole life and I've admired the hell out of them. I don't think, I mean, it is a dangerous job. And a guy will, I saw somebody write something. Now let's just not get too far ahead of ourselves. The journalists are good. Sure, that's not a dangerous job. Well, yeah, it is, man. If there's certain stories you're going after, yeah, it is. You can't argue, you know, like the man said, the numbers don't lie. When you got a guy getting his head chopped off, that's a dangerous job. I don't see anybody working for the phone company. That's a dangerous job. I don't see them getting their heads chopped off. You may have to go up a telephone pole every now and again. I don't even see firemen having their heads sawed off. Have you ever seen, I don't want to gross you out, and I certainly don't want to scare you. I watched a decapitation video because, as Kurosawa said, the great Japanese director, an artist should never close his eyes. And I really believe that. So I watched this, much to my horror. And I'm not going to get graphic or anything, but the word saw is perfect. And that's what happened to some of our journalists. All right, you know, so I don't know, man. Do I put them up there with cops? No. Do I put them up there with firefighters? No, I don't. I don't want to get anybody pissed off at me. I'm just saying it's a dangerous job. But to see our president, your president, maybe my president, I don't want to be an asshole, but, you know, to see that, to see him take this press corps that we have today and wrap him around his finger is almost funny. I would be laughing if it wasn't so damn sad. You know, if it wasn't, you're waiting for these guys to knock it out of the park, and he just handles these guys like it ain't no thing, man. When he wants to talk to him, he does. Well, that isn't what presidents do. That's what this one's doing. What are you going to do about it? Well, you going to go to the American people? The American people they only do what you tell them to do. And let's face it, folks. You know, I love you and I respect you and you, me, and we're all, you know, one happy family. But, you know, we are a bunch of sheep. We really are. We do whatever the hell they tell us to do. We think we're using our free wills, and I suppose we are, but we're so lazy in a lot of ways. I'm looking at a movie right now with Shelley Winters, and, well, never mind. We're so intellectually, I guess that's the word, intellectually lazy in a lot of ways. We just, oh, we go along with it, and we think we've used our free will, and we think, well, I made the decision. You didn't make any decision, man. You just got swept up in the flow of traffic. You know, you got pushed along there in the midway. Anyway, this guy, Trump, he says, are you going to meet the president? No. Well, Mr. President, I said I'm not going to meet him. I got other things to do. What are you going to do? I'm going to go golfing. Golfing? Golfing? What's wrong with that? You said that if Obama went, you were going to go golf? That's the thing. Yeah, I'm going to golf. But you said Obama, that I'm not Obama. Am I Obama? I'm Donald Trump. I golf. Obama was, you know, effing the dog, man. He was effing the pooch. Me? I'm just relaxing. I'm going to hit a few balls. Obama was blowing it. He was wasting valuable time. He was wasting the public's time. He was getting people killed, as a matter of fact. Me? I'm just hitting a bucket of balls. See? That's how you do that, Sean. Or whoever the hell is the press secretary this week. Well, okay, Mr. Trump. Yeah, just trust me on this one. That's how that goes. That's exactly how that goes. That sounds ridiculous, but that's exactly what's happening. And, well, what are you going to say to them about the proof? What? About the proof of the wiretap? You handle it, man. Just tell them that, you know, I didn't say that I had absolute proof. I didn't say, well, yes, you did. No, I didn't. Anybody that read 1984 knows that one, the bureau that Winston Smith worked in, Winston Smith being the protagonist of the book, the hero, he works in the Ministry of Bullshit, whatever they call this thing. And one of his jobs, when a public figure falls out of favor, when a war hero suddenly pisses off somebody in the upper or the inner party, you know, that was what they called the inner party. There's the party, then there's the inner party. Like in America today, a lot of these super paranoid types say we have the state and we have the deep state. These guys sit and work overtime coming up with these. I tell you, all this stuff would be solved if we were a little bit brighter as a people. That's all. Deep state, I don't care. If we were just a little bit brighter, if we paid a little bit closer attention, we wouldn't have half the problems we've got. But instead, because we're a little thick, we come up with deep state. What does that mean? I'm dumb. What is a deep state? I'm too stupid to pay attention. So, in 1984, Winston Smith sits in the Ministry of Propaganda, the Ministry of Horseshit. And one of his jobs is to do the following. When someone who is very well known to the public falls out of favor, he is to take the old stories of this guy being such a great person. Here's an article from, September, let's say, of 1978, where the guy won a medal in the battlefields against the Eurasians, and he's just the greatest thing since sliced bread. Winston has to go through that and delete all the positive references and instead insert negative things like, he's a child molester, he did this, that. So in other words, he's changing history. He's rewriting history literally. To George Orwell, this was one of the evils of a totalitarian state. To say, no, I didn't say that, I said this. That was, and obviously, he could see it happening even in the late 40s after World War II. I didn't do that, I do this. Winston Smith goes through all these stories and inserts all this bad stuff and recycle, puts that back into the system now. That old story is gone, the new story is there. And when you want to know about Mr. Blow, who is this great hero, I thought, no, well, here's the story, he was a piece of... Wait a minute, I thought you got that wrong, comrade. No, 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 brother. Get your head right. Get your thoughts right. Double plus bad. That's the other thing about the language. They would limit words. So when a guy says, I've got so many words. Yeah, all right. The fewer the words, the more limited your language. The more limited your language, the more limited your ability to think. Did you ever think about that? That's exactly what Orwell was saying. He was saying, because we think in language. We think with words. Even our thoughts are words. So controlling the mind, a big part of that is controlling the words. So if I have the privacy of my thoughts, and in the privacy of my thoughts, I'm thinking of, I really love that girl, but if I eliminate the word love, I'm thinking I unhate her. That was the word in 1984, was unhate. So everything was referenced off of hate. So anyway, how does that apply to today? Well, yesterday I said that the guy was wiretapping me. Well, no, I didn't really. I said that maybe there was some evidence. Wait a minute. You said in the tweet, no, bullshit. But it's right there. Yeah, that's what you think it says. One of the smartest things that Trump does is he doesn't delete tweets. He lets them ride, man. You don't like it? You think it's funny? That's. I can make that mean anything. I can make that mean anything. All he has to do is convince enough people whereby he has a really rabid, fiercely loyal base, and they may be a minority of people, in which is the fact in his case, but they are exerting just enough pressure to, you know, sort of force the free press and the rest of the sort of decent people of the country to sort of back up a step. It's like a little yapping dog, you know? I mean, a little yapping chihuahua, man, will make you, you know, back up, because that sucker still has teeth and he can still sink them into your leg. And I've been bit by chihuahuas because I used to work for a veterinarian, and it don't feel too good. As I mentioned, you know, Chris Wallace, I was trying to think of the other guy. The other guy that I thought was... The only guy that I thought did any good during the campaign, as we mentioned, was Chris Matthews, but he only interviewed Trump once. So basically all I'm saying is I don't even want to get into the whole what's good, what's bad about a guy, about an individual. I'm talking right now about how really impressive the guy is when it comes to handling. And I never in my wildest dreams thought you could take the American press and kick them around the street like they're just some bum. Because that's what Trump does. He just boots these guys from one curb to the next. It's truly amazing. And dudes that we thought were, like, Wolf Blitzer. There's another guy. You know, now you notice, I got Chris Wallace here on Fox, Wolf Blitzer on CNN. I thought he was a very effective and, you know, strong. Man, that guy has been bounced like a freaking basketball. He keeps falling back on his training. And his training, and Chris Wallace's training, and everybody's training in the art of journalism is worthless against a guy like this. These guys have had to be educated. Now, think about this, folks. These guys have had to be educated as to how to ask a question. Are you ready for that? That's how bad the American press has been at dealing with the ever-changing political scene. They've had to be taught. If a guy says, for instance, Martians are living in your underwear right now, The American press has been so steeped in what they think is objective reporting, and it is objective. It's objective to the point of stupid. It's objective to the point where it's not objective anymore. It's reflective of some mental impairment. Because if you say the following thing, president says Martians live in our underwear. Congress disagrees. You're now seen as very, 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 very stupid by the guy that reads that, as opposed to when they finally got their bearings, the guy says, president may be mentally ill, refers to Martians living in our underwear. That's a far more accurate statement. I'm not saying President Trump's mentally ill. I'm just saying that's very objective. Is there something wrong with the president? That kind of thing. But they don't do that. Or they didn't anyway, because they had no frame of reference. You know, they've never been challenged. They don't know what really being a journalist is, because as we mentioned, if you're a journalist in a country where you get arrested and led into a football stadium where you sit with your hands behind your back and your head down for hours at a time, you know, I mean, that's really knowing the lay of the land. You're really getting an idea as to how serious things are. And as a reporter, you have to report on that. We don't have anything near that life-threatening or career-threatening or truth-threatening in this country. You know, that's why, you know, I guess we admire any reporter that's been in a situation like that and has gotten a little bit of that truth reported. We love and admire, and we hold those people up, man. Like, I don't know when it was, a few weeks ago, I mentioned Bill Stewart of ABC. I don't know how many people are old enough to remember that. Bill Stewart was shot and killed on film, and it was broadcast by his network, ABC. ABC wanted all of us to see what happened to their reporter in Nicaragua. And it was when that guy Somoza, I think, was running Nicaragua. It was before the Sandinistas. The Sandinistas had a guerrilla war going on. That's why the Somoza regime was so on pins and needles and, you know, had their armor on. And American press, as well as the world's press, was there to report it. And Bill Stewart was stopped at a roadblock. Cameraman had the whole thing go. The cameraman had it going. I don't know what Bill Stewart was doing. Maybe he was testing it. Maybe he wanted to see if he could get through. Obviously, he didn't know how dangerous it was. He walked up. The soldier told him to turn around and lay down on his stomach. Stewart did as he was told. The soldier turned and said something to one of the other soldiers, turned back with his weapon, put it to the back of Bill Stewart's head, and killed him. You know, and that's a frightening thing. You don't want to think that that's the way it's supposed to be, but that's the way it was for him. But it isn't that way for most reporters. And although they, you know, they like to believe that they come from that tradition, and they do, you know, they're part of that tradition. But you gotta cinch it up a little bit, man. You know, you gotta get a little bit tougher than some of these guys. Because, like I said, you know, Trump walks into I don't know why he's reluctant to give a press conference. He kicked their ass. Go on. Give a press conference there, Trump. You'd kick all of their asses. All you got to do is walk out and say they're being rude. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. No, you know, I can't deal with it. I think I just saw it today. These guys are really rude. All right, so that's that. This was going to be the pre-show, and I've turned it into the show because we gave the panel another day off. I took the week off. Now, they have insisted on taking a few days off. I don't know if I'm going to give them the whole week off, but they can have a couple of days off. I just saw this headline. North Korea warns of merciless strikes as U.S. carrier joins South Korea drills. Not that I, you know, don't take them seriously, but I'm always, these dictators that we go up against, they're always saying things like the mother of all battles, that, you know, merciless strikes, and they never come through. I mean, they don't really. It's never really the mother of all battles, although it's bad, but in other words, I'm not saying that you're not a badass. I'm not saying North Koreans aren't badasses in their own way, or that the Iranians or the Iraqis before we invaded weren't badasses in their own way. But it's really not, it's not going to scare anybody, man. One of the things that I will say about, historically, about the United States when it comes to, you know, military engagements, there's always been historically, this effort, this tactic by these states to try to scare the American forces. And the reason for that is because they think we are lazy, jazz music listening, pot smoking, degenerate, race mixing swine. I mean, that's their view. They always have the wrong idea. If you come from a society like that, especially if you're a totalitarian a dictator, you're the last thing you're interested in is learning about culture. So you don't know a lot about the world. So you just have this one view of how things are. And in a free society like America, everybody there has got to be some kind of a degenerate beatnik freak, and we'll kick their ass in 1 week. All we have to do is scare the shit out of them, and boom. Like with Saddam, the mother of all wars, and this North Korea guy, and Hitler, he had his whole thing, and then the Japanese, they had their bonsai thing. They thought that that's all they needed to do, and it didn't work, and that was kind of their first little bit of education when it comes to how this thing works in America. We're all doing our thing, but when the time comes, we pull together and we fight for the good old USA. The problem that I'm having right now is that so much of the USA for all of us is tied up in not just the flag and the life, but it's also in the president, and well, I don't want to get anybody angry at me. I will say that this guy is very difficult for a lot of us to rally around. The other day, what was it? Spicer did this. He said, they said these new economic numbers, they're really good. But the president said these numbers were phony and was fake news and we shouldn't believe them. And Spicer laughingly, and I mean laughing, he said, the president wanted me to be very specifically say to you that those numbers, they were fake. This one's real. Ha, ha, ha. Now, I don't know whether he was laughing at Trump with the reporters as if to say, can you believe this nut that I work for? Or did he think it was so funny that it was so easy to bullshit these guys? And they're not bullshitted. That's the wrong word. But frankly, that's what's happening. If you look at them and say, those numbers that he said were fake? Well, this one's real. Ha, ha, ha. I took it to mean, what are you going to do about it? I mean, he laughed, man. I don't know how many of, and I don't even know if it's part of the job, to stand there and say, what are you laughing at? Do you understand what it is you're saying? Let's get real. Let's get serious. Now, are they real or are they not? If you're saying that they're not real and they suddenly became real, isn't that interesting? Why do you say that? Did they press him? I have no idea. But Spicer laughed, and I believe he was laughing with Trump. I think the two of them were laughing and saying, this is today's line, and you guys are going to print it, and you can't do anything about it. You have to print it like it is a valid statement, and, it's just another side of the ongoing discussion and debate of, the American way, because they don't know how to do it. They don't know how. Maybe they don't have the guts to say, Sean Spicer says something really f***ed up, expects us to believe, or something like that, expects American people to believe. They won't do that.
Well, do you want them to be even more left-wing than they are?
Wait a minute, man. You can't tell me. As a matter of fact, I don't even have to discuss it with anybody. That is a jacked-up statement to say all of that stuff was fake, but this thing is real. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to say the following thing. We will report this. The president now claims phony data suddenly, magically, is real data. What's wrong with him? That's an accurate thing to say. That's accurate. That's not being political. There's something wrong with a guy. All of a sudden, magically, it's real. Well, what happened? How is it real all of a sudden? Because it's Trump's presidency, so this stuff's got to be, this good news has got to be the result of that, because that's, our opinion is fact, and you guys report it as fact, because you're good dogs, you guys in the press, Now, I'm getting all this stuff out on these podcasts here as the crew has the time off, but I will tell you that I appreciate you checking it out, listening to it, and they will be back. The crew will be back tomorrow. Promise. The crew will be back tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat station. So Let me just say, I appreciate you guys hanging with me here, the world-famous Phil Henry Show podcast. This was, like I said, we weren't going to do another one of these, but I had given the panel some time off. I don't know where Margaret is. She's probably laying on a beach somewhere. The rest of them doing their thing. I'm Phil Henry. I'm the executive producer of the Phil Henry podcast. And all rights reserved for Siempre Incorporated on Podcast One.